you're currently on a tour. I think you have 1 week left or so. How long has it been so far?
This has been actually a very short European tour. It's only been 6 shows. Before this, we were in China for 3 shows there.
This year as well?
This year, yeah. But it's not really a full European tour this year. It's just more or less, there's 2 festivals on this particular run. That's why the extra shows have been put in. And we haven't played down in Slovenia since
maybe 2 years.
2 years or something. So we wanted to come down on the new album, the Helios Erebus album, and definitely play for the fans. Because I think the new show is the best it's been. So we were eager to come back here.
Yeah. How come you played in China? Were you invited? Or was it your...
It's our second... We have good fan base there. So it was our second time in China. And
what part of China?
We've done Hong Kong, which is kind of separate. They don't like to be referred to as Chinese there.
I interviewed not long ago a guy from Hong Kong, a musician. Yeah. And he said that the whole scene revolves basically around drum and bass over there. So guitar music as well.
We had a good crowd there. I mean, we sold out the venue. We played with another post rock band called the Indie Haldi, that was a sold out show. And then Shanghai was the next show, was sold out as well. And Beijing, we had a good crowd there as well. Beijing is a little bit difficult to promote the concert because of all the Communist Party restrictions. So. There's no Facebook, there's no Twitter, there's no Instagram, everything is banned. So
it's hard to promote your shows and there. You know.
You said that you were in China maybe 2 years ago.
Two years ago, we done the same run back then. We done Hong Kong, Shanghai,
and how did this thing happen that you...
Just promoters want to say, you got lots of fans here, do you want to come over and play? And we say, for sure, and that's the way it normally happens. The promoter will contact us and we'd be more than happy to... if the promoter contacts us in any country like they did in Brazil, we'd be more than happy to go there and play
when
with fans.
When did you play in Brazil?
Yes, we've done Brazil as well. We've done Rio and we've done São Paulo, so that was great as well.
And this usually happens when people invite you?
Yeah, so basically, you can't invite yourselves because like these countries, you need visas. For China, you need special work permits that have been approved by the Chinese government, so... They always check the band's Facebook history. So if you're one of those bands who like to say free Tibet and stuff, you won't get into the country. You'd be banned. So for us it's fine because we haven't got lyrics as such. Since we haven't got a lyrical content, it's a big plus for like the Chinese government. But say if you have offensive lyrics. Trying to get into China, it's very, very difficult. Most likely you won't get a permit to go.
It's fun, because, I don't know, you probably know Laibach, a band from here, Slovenia, and they played in North Korea not long ago, and...
They
had some censorship and stuff like that, but I don't think it was as difficult as you were explaining about China and...
Yeah, well, I don't know how they've gone to North Korea. It's notoriously... difficult country to visit, and if you step out of line there, you won't be seen ever again.
Well, the thing is, you know, with North Korea, most of what we hear about North Korea is what the Western press and media reports to us, so there's no way of really verifying until you went there yourself, I guess. But
well, they said they had a really nice time there.
Yeah, I'm sure they've seen the best part of North Korea. I wouldn't say they've seen the slave labor camps or anything like that.
Do you organize, because you release your albums on your own label, do you organize tours yourself as well, or do you work with some agencies?
Yes, we do everything ourselves. We do everything from write, record the records, release the records, do our own tours. And we have a booking agent, but we have to do all the tour managing, driving, technical stuff.
So basically, this booking agency sets up the whole...
Yeah, they're like a middleman, so... They get to 10% for booking the show. It just saves a lot of time because we used to book our own shows a few years back. It just would be a lot of emails, even have one show, so we let them do that. So it frees up a little bit more time for us.
But you are still touring quite a lot. I mean, especially for a band that started off more like a studio project. When did this change or turn come that you wanted to play live as much?
I think it was a natural thing. You know, people were, you know, listening to our music and wanted to see the band perform the tracks live. And
but when you started recording music, did you know back then that you were going to play live?
We always had a game plan that we were going to be able to perform this live in some capacity. I mean, it took a long time for us to get to a point to where it is now. At the beginning, you know, we found it hard to try and recreate the sounds that we've made. We had to use a lot of backing track technology to try and recreate a lot of the sounds. But since that time, all the technology has really advanced, and we can do 95% of it completely live now, which is fantastic. I think we started playing live probably during the Far From Refuge album, more so. Alice Wilde had hit, we couldn't get any shows in Europe for that. We played a few Irish shows already at that point, and that's when Lloyd had joined the group, and they worked out really, really well. And but I think now the way it is right now is definitely the best live it's ever been. I mean, we've got Jamie now on keyboards, which means we can play a lot more of the intricate stuff. It used to be very difficult for me to kind of play and then switch to the guitar. Mm-hmm. I actually used to hate playing live because it was so nervous. Did I tune my guitar correctly? Did I get the right keyboard patch? Am I going to make a mistake and then make another mistake on the guitar? You know, it was that was stressful for me. Mm-hmm. So
is Jamie, was he involved in the last couple of albums?
He was only involved in the last one, which was Helios Erebus. That was the first time he was involved in any of the albums. I had already started Origins with another guy. And
how does that work for you? You know, when a new member comes, when you record, does it break like your routine, or does he bring his own stuff
He brought his own stuff to it, and I think he actually, if anything, really dramatically improved and revitalized the band. You know, for me, I know when I'd written with Nails, The End of the Beginning, and All Is Violent, and Far From Refuge with Lloyd, and we'd also done even the self-titled. At that point, I kind of nearly got everything that was on my chest out of me at that point. And then, you know, with Agent Fifth Son, I was struggling a little bit to try and come up with an album at that point. Origins, we were kind of trying to throw everything at the wall to see what would stick. We learned a lot from that album, but I think when Jamie joined the group, Helios Erebus really, I think, is the first time it just felt as cohesive as it did since the self-titled record to us. Mm-hmm. Everything seemed to kind of fall into place again, and we've already started writing another new album, and it, to me, is just getting better and better. So I think with Jamie now, it's kind of a new fan energy that we haven't had in a long, long time. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited.
So you're working on new material?
We're working on new material. The first track, our song, or whatever you want to call it, the piece of music we play tonight, is brand new. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really exciting.
How long is usually the process of recording an album? Or making an album?
It can vary.
So 2 to 3 years?
It can take 2 to 3 years, but Far From Refuge took 2 to 3
and
months.
And you test those songs first when you play them live?
Well, this is the first. It was actually Helios Erebus is the first time that we actually wrote something, didn't finish it in the studio, but then took it out live. So we're doing that with this album. So we've already changed the new song twice since we took it out live. There was bits and pieces that we felt.
So maybe the process is going to be even longer
maybe.
This time around.
Yeah, what we're thinking is this. We're thinking of no longer than seven songs, and what we're going to do is play at least half of them first live. There's going to be an ambient part to the record that probably you're not going to learn anything from it live, because it's not really intended for live. It's more for chilling out to. So that part we will leave for the studio, but certainly the songs that involve the whole band playing, I think we'll perform all those live first.
You said that it changed a couple of times already, this was new song. Did you have like any second thoughts when you played the songs you recorded or put out on album, and then you played them live, and after you played them, you were like, I wish we put that on album?
I think there is an element, but
live is quite different. I mean, say like the tempos would be a lot faster, parts will be different, you know, there'll be different parts that are not on the record, you know, to be, in a way, like, when we wrote the albums first, we would have to back engineer the songs to work in a lot of environments. So
a lot of them didn't naturally work.
A lot of the older songs didn't naturally work in a live environment. A good example is from Dust to Beyond, the first album. It's kind of like a
very
chill out drum loop thing, but live, it's a completely different experience. It's like a monster, you know. When it gets, especially towards the end of the track.
Saying that, what we did with the Helios Erebus album, we wanted to capture the live sound, because there was always this experience of, oh yeah, the record's cool, but wait till you see them live, or vice versa. I prefer the record's more of a chill out, and live it's quite heavy. But for Helios Erebus, we wanted to bring the two sides together as close as we possibly could.
Is it difficult to bring these two things
No,
together?
It was actually very easy. The one thing that I had to allow this time was to let everybody play their own parts. You know, there was no point in me trying to play a bass line or try to play one of Jamie's piano lines. If I had written something, I have to then erase what I played, and then they play it their way.
Yeah.
And that was immediately started to sound like the band. And if I had a drum loop, I had to get rid of it on Helios. I had to say, Lloyd, do what you think is right. And suddenly everything started to sound already like the way it would live. And then I also used only the sounds that we have for live, rather than using a different amplifier. I would use the sounds that we use live, and I think it really just ended up sounding very similar to what people would expect from the show. So that was pretty cool. I think we're going to be doing that again with the next album, but this time we have much more sounds available to us. Jamie's invested in a brand new Mac laptop with main stage, which allows us to use far, far more sounds than we've ever had before. So there's no limitations now.
You didn't use computers before?
No, we never trusted computers, because computers always crashed on us in the past.
It's working now?
Yeah, the reason it did, we spent nearly 6 weeks of solid work trying to figure out, you know, we bought a new Mac, put main stage in, and it was crashing still after 5 minutes. So we'd hired this guy called Rob, who plays with a band called Xenon Field back in Ireland. He's a wizard with computers. And we spent weeks and weeks trying to debug the system, what was upsetting it, and he was able to fix every single thing. So we have an A system that hasn't crashed once since we brought it on the road since China. And we also have a B system that Jamie can hit, a B system, and it switches over. So the likelihood of it having a complete meltdown live is highly unlikely, but it's possible.
But you know, maybe that adds to the whole experience if you have some troubles on stage. I mean, you know, probably the band Battles.
Battles, yeah.
They played here, they played not long ago, but the previous time they played, they had lots of trouble, technical trouble. But I mean, it was nice to see band, how they resolved those troubles, how they got around them, and how they made it work.
I think, you know, for us, we've had, you know, in the past, we've had problems with laptops when we've used them. And you remember in Canada, we've had a meltdown on our system, and you've just got to, the first rule is never panic, you know, and you've got to, you know, just see the kind of, it's live and anything can happen, you know, you should never get stressed, but it's obviously very easy to get stressed. But for the musician, it definitely throws you out of sync as far as what you're trying to, you know, to get your mind on this, the feeling of the song. When something breaks down, you're just kind of, your mind is still hovering back to what happened, because automatically you're saying to yourself, that shouldn't have happened, why did it happen? And you're technically thinking rather than emotionally feeling your music. So I would prefer it never crash, you know, but things do happen. If it happens to certain equipment, that if it does break down, our whole show is finished. So that's quite nerve-wracking as well. So it hasn't happened.
Maybe you can do an acoustic set or something.
I can do that, all right. You know,
did you ever play an acoustic concert?
90% of our material is written on acoustic guitar, you know, so never live, but I've written Name a Song, Forever Lost, parts that were written with the piano on acoustic guitar. Suicide by Star was written on acoustic guitar. What else, even on the Tempest Horizon, acoustic guitar, Fragile acoustic guitar, all of them were written on acoustic guitar. It was only the latter material, you know, the heavier stuff where you need a bit of distortion, or Echoes was written with an amplifier and pedals and stuff on it. But no, a lot of the chord progressions and stuff would be worked out on acoustic guitar. I think what happens then, though, you know, we add up more textures, so to do a complete acoustic guitar rendition of it would be quite difficult. But a few tracks you could do, New Year's End or something, from Far For Refuge, very easy to do.
can you say what does the band focus on when you work in the studio and when you versus when you play live?
What's our main focus in the studio?
And what on stage?
Well, it's two very different environments. If we're writing in the studio, I don't see it as a studio. I just see it all as a tool to write music. You know,
it's like painting a picture in the studio. It could take a long time to get your vision, but live is more like taking a photograph. I suppose it's a much quicker process. You're delivering your music very quickly to the audience, where in the studio you're composing.
The difference is, you know, in the studio you're trying. You've got something on your chest that you want to, you know, put into a piece of music.
Do you ever think about how this is going to sound live?
No. At that point, you know, let's just give you an example. Let's just say a traumatic day. I remember my grandmother had passed away, and the last thing you're going to be thinking about is how you're going to play this piece of music live. And the first thing you do is you're feeling sense of loss, and you want to write that music that, you know, that remembers that person, and that comes first. It's only when we've written, say, the 10 songs, and I say to Niels, okay, which ones we need to do at least 4 or 5 of these live, then we start to think, okay, well, this will work, this won't work, this might work. And at that point we were very restricted because we didn't have a keyboard player back then. So now I think we've actually Forever Lost actually only came into our set 3 years ago. We never had done it before then. It was just, I couldn't play the piano, it was too hard. Mm-hmm. And then the electric guitar line was too important to leave out, so you had to be both at the same time. So that's when we just come into the set, and we never thought about how to do that live, but now it's just options have opened for us. Live is a very different thing in the sense that it's all about delivery. It's all about having a game plan and having, you know, a rehearsed set. I mean, that's what it's about. But at the same time, you still got to feel the music as you deliver it, which is the I find the hardest thing about live, because if the sound is not nice on stage, or, you know, I'm not hearing the drum set loud enough, any small thing can distract you from where you mentally need to be at. So we spend a lot of money on our own private in-ear monitoring systems. We're all able to change our stuff, so it's very important to be comfortable live. That's very important. So yeah, record, it's much more easier going than that, so because you've all day to get what you want to do right.
Can you tell what is the feedback like when you play in China, when you play in Brazil, or when you play in Europe, or even United States? Is it different? I mean, obviously you have hardcore fans all over the world, so I guess, I mean, their reaction to your music should be similar, but do you feel like any changes when you play in different parts?
Strange enough, I didn't.
Not really. I mean, in the past, you know, Hong Kong seemed to be a little more harder to impress than, say, Beijing or Shanghai, but the last time you played, just recently, it seemed to be, everybody seemed to be equally as happy. I think the more tougher places to play, I'm trying to think, I would say Northern Ireland probably one of the most toughest places I've ever played.
Why?
I don't know, it's just really, really tough up there, you know, I don't know what it is.
You think the audience reactions are pretty similar? Yeah. I mean, I suppose Russia, we have the biggest crowds there. So those shows are always crazy. You have to be playing 2,000 people. Like,
see, it depends on the audience mindset. You know, if people are coming to your show because
it also depends like what day it is. Like, say, if you're playing a Monday night in Germany, you know, the fans will have work the next day, so they're just there to see the music, which is fine. But if you're playing like a Saturday night
party night,
it's, you know, people are there to have more fun and they're drinking. So it's lots of different factors that would.
Again, if you're playing in a place where it's kind of a few different groups and you're not popular with the other group's audience, you know, fan base, that's a tough gig, because suddenly it doesn't matter what you do, they're there to ridicule any aspect to your show. I mean, that's happened maybe once, twice maybe, but it doesn't really affect us, because the one thing that I've learned is my father, who was a musician, and he's always said to us, when you're up there, you do what you do. You can't change what you do. You do what you do. And you know, I've seen it. I won't even name the group, but I remember a group that toured with us, and there was a problem. There was two bands before us, and the first band were late and they set up on the floor in a German venue to set up on the floor. And the immediate attitude from the German audience was that the other band and ourselves didn't allow space on stage for this other group. But because both bands were late, one decided to set up on the floor and the other one on stage. And the band who set up on the floor had spread lies around that they weren't allowed to set up on stage. And I knew what was going to happen. The band got onto stage when the other group had finished. And the audience didn't clap. They didn't say anything. And what happens then, people's game plan goes out the window. Suddenly a nice slow song suddenly turns into a fast song because they're like, Jesus, it's not working. What are we going to do? And I'd never seen it coming, but I did. I knew from experience what was going to happen. So the first thing I said on the microphone was, like, oh, first thing I want to get something straight before I even play my set tonight. The band that played on the floor were late because they were drinking all hours of the night and got here late, and that's why they were set up on the floor. So don't anybody boo me like you booed the last band, because that was just absolutely outrageous from you guys to do that. So that's, you've got to get the audience, they got to have respect for you and you've got to have respect for them, and you've got to always get that straight. And that's something that I feel very strongly. I'll stop the whole show tonight just like that if I don't feel there's respect there, because we're here to entertain. But we can only do it with their help. It's a 50-50% thing. I mean, if I do 50% and they don't give us anything, it's only a half standard show. So the audience is the other 50%. And we only come to do these shows for the audience.
Yeah.
We want them with us.
Yeah. I talked to, I did an interview with A Place to Bury Strangers.
Yeah.
And they were invited to open for some big Canadian band. I don't remember the name. And A Place to Bury Strangers got booed.
Right.
By the public, you know, by the audience,
right.
And then later got hate mail and stuff like that, but they enjoyed the whole experience. I mean, the band invited them in the next years as well,
yeah,
to open for them, so they really enjoyed their stuff.
Yeah, this often happens with if you're going to be supporting like a heavy metal band. I think was it This Will Destroy You or
Play with Deftones,
had the same experience, you know, the people saying, get the hell off the stage, where's your vocalist?
Does that give you motivation to
we've never been,
them a bit even more?
Yeah, we've never been in that situation, so uh-huh. I don't know.
I've never been put into that situation, and all I can say is we are handled with no sweat. No problem, not intimidated by anybody. I don't think we had close to when we played with Caspian years ago in Poland. We had maybe 10 hecklers before we even began play the set. I didn't even have to talk to Niels. We just knew what needed to be done, which is nothing. We didn't even start. We just stood there. We're just saying, come on, yeah, keep saying it. 15 minutes later, people begin to get worried that we weren't going to play. And I said, finally, you shut the hell up. We can start the show. So this is all about getting it right from the beginning.
Yeah.
Belfast, so I won't say what I said up there, but yeah.
You can say it, I mean.
I just said they were all sitting in chairs all the way in the back. I said, this is it's a fucking rock show. Fuck up here, you know, and show some respect and stand up here or we're not going to start. They all begrudgingly walk forward. And, you know, I think it's important to have people on stage that have a bit of power or a bit of charisma, or someone that's basically there and you know, experience to handle any situation.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that we have earned the right and we've come up the hard way, we didn't come up the easy way, so we'll play any gig, you know, and command respect.
Talking about hard ways, you released the Origins album on, was it Rocket Girl label? And this was the only album that you released through another label, right?
No, we All This Violence originally was released through Rocket Girl.
That wasn't originally, it was re-released.
Re-released through Rocket Girl, a year after we'd released it. Moment of Stillness was re-released.
What was this last time, just a one album deal? Or why did you go back to your own label? What was the experience like of working with Rocket Girl?
Vanita, you know, who is really, really cool. You know, I really like Vanita. We were hoping that we were going to kind of broaden our audience with Origins, but it didn't work. And that wasn't Vanita's fault. It was more or less the band's fault. We were trying to do something a little bit different. Artistically, we were just experimenting, but you know, experimenting, you gotta be careful how much you experiment. We probably should have done an EP first to kind of gauge the reaction of what way we could have went. I think kind of we condensed Origins into an EP, I think it would have been brilliant, and there's a lot of stuff in there, you know, that we just threw to see what would happen. But yeah, it didn't work out quite the way we'd expected to. So Hear These Arabs was a very important album for us. Had we, you know, made Origins Part 2, I don't think we'd be sitting here right now. We had to get that album right. And Napalm Records heard Hear These Arabs, were very interested in that. So they're going to be releasing our next record.
It's next three albums.
Right? Next three albums is with Napalm mm-hmm. Records. So we're, you know, working really hard, our heads down. One thing we've learned, you can't have an ego, you've just got to keep your head down. You know, we're well aware that could be a guy in his bedroom right now, could be writing better material than us. We know this is very possible, and we've got to keep our heads down and challenge ourselves as much as we can to make better music. So we're really trying really hard to dig deep inside of ourselves to give people the best music that we possibly can, and we hope that we can achieve that with this next record. We have one song that we feel is superior than anything that we've released so far, so you'll hear this mm-hmm. tonight. That's mm-hmm. the first song.
You mentioned post-rock in the beginning, and I read some couple of interviews with you, and well, you don't, as many other bands, you don't want to be put in a certain box, and you certainly, I mean, there are similarities with other post-rock bands obviously, but you also do stuff that stands out, or that is something of your own. But what I'm interested in is, why is it so hard for bands to just say, yeah, I'm playing this kind type of music, I'm playing this type of music?
It's very easy, because when we began, we weren't post-rock. Yeah. When we began, we were an electronic trip-hop group, and then we were known as dance trip-hop. You know, in the beginning, has no semblance of post-rock whatsoever. So we began completely trip-hop electronic, nothing post-rock as far as we've never even heard of it. Obviously it existed, but we didn't hear it at that point. We added, it was natural when we played live the end of the beginning, we started to progress because we realized drum loops wasn't really happening, so the live drums come in, guitars felt better than just playing keys. So that's how All of the Violent was stylistically born. Suddenly post-rock was slammed on top of us, which at the time was very welcoming, because dance at that point, or electronic music, was the kiss of death. If you were known as dance music in the early 2000s, because, you know, the whole Chemical Brother explosion had just happened, and Massive Attack's Mezzanine album, all that stuff suddenly was old hat, and they were looking for the next thing. So post-rock was very welcoming, and because it had never really reached a mainstream status until the likes of Sigur Rós and all these bands had come about, it was a really fresh, it was more or less like a new genre that people hadn't heard of. So at that point it was very welcoming, but there was a big difference in it, because post-rock at that point had, you know, very long compositions. A lot of these songs could have been up to 12 to 20 minutes long. All ours were like 4 minutes and 3.5 minutes, and some post-rock people didn't think it was post-rock. They said, this is not post-rock, it doesn't do this and it doesn't do that. You know, we didn't have the massive use of delay pedals and the tremmy sounds and all the little trills on the guitar. There was a lot of stuff, there were similarities, but no more of a similarity than, say, Death in Vegas would have been to half of these groups. So we didn't begin anyway, you know, as a post-rock band. So that's why we kind of reject it slightly, because there are massive differences between it. We refer to what we do as space rock. What we like to do is take people onto a cosmic journey.
I think the main difference is like a lot of newer post-rock bands, they wanted to be post-rock bands. They would have listened to Mogwai or whatever, and that would have been their focus. We pretty much came onto the scene more or less by accident. So that is the main difference.
And then there's something I will say to that. You've got then groups listening to Mogwai, and then your Godspeed You Black Emperor, and that's, you know, they're your post-rock groups. And then suddenly we get thrown a little bit stylistically into the mix, and before you know it, all these other groups have suddenly dragged us even more into post-rock, because, you know, oh yeah, that's a bit like this and a bit like that and a bit like this, you know, Explosions in the Sky, you know, oh yeah, you guys sound a bit like that. But do we? I think we have a little bit more than just guitar, bass and drums, you know. I see critics saying, you know, that we sound like Explosions in the Sky. There's not one song that we have that sounds remotely like that band. They suddenly start introducing electronics now, and suddenly, you know what I mean, we're going to be more like Explosions in the Sky, because people are borrowing from us too, you know. So I think the scene is basically eating itself alive in many ways, you know. So we've never really tried to pay too much attention to the genre, but to me, what is post-rock at the end of the day? It seems like anything from metal, post-metal.
Yeah, now it's gotten really broad.
Yeah, it's just a silly term at this point. I think it's just music, and I think a lot of people seem to be quite
sensitive, you know, oh, are they original? I don't really believe, you know, are they, you know, some people would definitely think that we're the kind of group that probably listens to these other records carefully, analyze it, and then go back into the studio and go, here's a track that sounds like that. Doesn't that sound a bit like that? If we put that together, it'll be a post-rock. We never did that, never will do that. We've always written music from the heart, and the people that can't tell the difference, F them, I don't give a shit, because we know what we do is from the heart, always has been. And you can always tell the difference between the groups that don't do that and that do borrow from all the different styles. And they're the ones that give post-rock a bad name, in my opinion.